Okay, now we start with the new chapter, the second ultimate truth. Now I will go really slowly. The second ultimate truth is mental factors, or we call in Pali, cetasika. Cetasika in Pali is called cetasika because they arise depend on citta. Consciousness arise depend on citta, on citta. That's why it's called cetasika. Citta cannot arise alone. Consciousness cannot arise alone, but must arise accompanied or associated with mental factors. And mental factors cannot arise segregated from consciousness. The relationship between them is association relation. Sampayuta pachayo, according to the patana, the methods of conditional relations. Although citta and cetasika function interdependently, consciousness is to be the forerunner of the mental factors, because mental factors assist in the cognition of the object depending upon consciousness. And the relationship between consciousness and mental factors is compared to a king and his ministers. When the king travels, he does not travel alone, but he always travels accompanied by his ministers. Similarly, whenever a consciousness arises, it never arises alone, but always accompanied by its associations of mental factors. This is the relationship between mental factors and consciousness. Although the function of consciousness is to be a forerunner of the mental factors, the characteristic of consciousness, we have discussed already, is just aware of the object. It cannot by itself be good or bad. It becomes good, consciousness becomes good or evil depending on the associated mental factors. Mental factors have four characteristics. It arises together with consciousness and ceases together with consciousness. It takes the same object as consciousness, and it has the same base as a consciousness. Let's see the thought process. In the tongue-do cognitive process, let's say the seven jhavanas, seven jhavanas. When you are enjoying your food, what type of consciousness arises in your mental stream? Rooted in? When you are enjoying your food, greed. So the consciousness rooted in greed will arise at the jhavana stage for seven times. And so consciousness rooted in greed will arise, and it must arise together with mental factors. So there are certain mental factors, for example 19 mental factors will arise at the jhavana state with the consciousness rooted in greed. Then when this jhavana ceases, the mental factors, consciousness rooted in greed ceases, then the mental factors also cease together and take the same object as consciousness. Number third characteristic, mental factor takes the same object. This jhavana is consciousness rooted in greed. It takes taste as object. So when consciousness takes taste as object, mental factors also take taste as object. Now let's say the jhavana arise depend on heart base. Consciousness rooted in greed arises depend on heart base. And its associated mental factors also arise depend on heart base. Now let's say qi, tongue, vibrating, arresting, five thought averting, and qi, tongue. Tongue consciousness arise depend on what? Tongue consciousness arises depend on taste. Then its associated mental factors also will arise depend on taste. I'm wrong. Tongue consciousness arise depend on tongue sensitivity. And consciousness cannot arise alone. It must arise with its associated mental factors. Then its associated mental factors also will arise depend on tongue sensitivity. Okay, so these are the four characteristics of mental factors. And citta consciousness and cittasika mental factors, both of them are called mind. Are called mind. And the Buddha says, mind leads the world. Mind leads the world. In the Christian Bible, now Christian Bible begins by saying, in the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Now in the Bible, start with God created heaven and earth. But in the Dhammapada, in the Dhammapada, it begins by saying, mind is forerunner. Mind is forerunner. Mind is forerunner of all states. All mental phenomena has mind as their chief. Mind mates are there. If one speaks or acts with a pure mind, if one speaks or acts with a wicked mind, pain follows one, as the wheel, the hoof of the drought ox. The Dhammapada verses 1. And the Buddha continues, if one speaks or acts with a pure mind, happiness follows one, as the shadow that never departs. Dhammapada verse 2. So by mind, the world is led, and by mind, it is drawn. And all men own the sovereignty of mind. In the working of karma, its most important feature is mind. All our words and deeds are colored by the mind we experience at such particular moments. And when the mind is guarded, bodily action, speech and thought are all guarded. Thus, it is very important to study cittasika, mental factors, because mental factors make the mind wicked or good. So there are 52 mental factors in Abhidhamma. You should not get frightened by the number. Just now 89, now another 52. But these mental factors are very, very interesting. So 52 mental factors can be divided into four groups. Let us read together. 7 universal, 6 occasional, 14 unwholesome factors, and 25 beautiful factors. Now what are the 7 universals? Contact, feeling, perception, volition, one-pointedness, life, faculty, attention. To explain, all these are ultimate truth. We are all talking about ultimate truth. Commentary gives 4 devices to explain ultimate truth. Each ultimate truth has 4 has its characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause. So So the commentator gives these four devices to explain each ultimate truth. First is characteristic. What is the characteristic? The characteristic is the salient quality of that phenomena. It's called characteristic. And number two is called function. Each ultimate truth has its own function to perform. And manifestation. Manifestation means the way it appears in the meditator's experience. For example, just now I mentioned consciousness. What is the manifestation of consciousness? How it appears in the meditator's experience. Consciousness appears in the meditator's experience as a continuity of processes. This is called manifestation, the way it appears in the mind. And the last one, proximate cause. The conditions upon which it depends. So each ultimate truth has these four: characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause. Now let us come to contact, pass up. The characteristic of contact is touching. The function, impingement, causes the consciousness and the object to impinge. Here, impingement or touching doesn't mean that physical touch, like I touch the table. It's not physical touch, it's mental state, a mental state. For example, when you see me eating pineapple, do you feel your saliva flowing in your mouth? No. Yes, this is called contact. So not necessarily the object must touch your tongue. That is called physical touch. The mental contact is a mental state. And the manifestation of contact is as occurrence of consciousness, sense, sensitivity, and object. That I will make it clear. For example, when a six sense object impinge six sense spaces, what are the six sense objects? What are the six sense objects? Visible object, sound, smell, taste, tangible object, and the last one, Dharma object. Okay. Then when this six sense object come to contact with six sense spaces, what are six sense spaces? Eye base, ear base, nose base, tongue base, body base, and heart base. Okay. And when six sense object come to contact with the six sense spaces, six types of consciousness arise. When I come to contact with the eye sensitivity, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. So the conjunction of these three, sense objects, sense spaces, and the consciousness, the conjunction of these three is called contact. The meeting together of these three is called contact. Okay? Number two, feeling, vedana. The characteristic of feeling is being felt. The function is enjoys or experiences the taste of the object. And the manifestation, relishing of the associated mental factors. So when you eat, when you enjoy your food, who enjoy the taste of the object? Is it you? I, a person? Who enjoy the taste of the object? The mental factor of feeling. The mental factor of feeling enjoys the taste of the object. This is the function. Function means the task it performs. So the mental factor of feeling perform the task of experiencing or enjoying the taste of the object. And this mental factor of feeling is not I, it's not a person, and it's not a being. It's just a mental factor arises, performs its function, then passes away. Okay? And there are three types of feelings. Number one is called joy or pleasant feeling. Sukha Vedana. This joy or pleasant feeling, for example, you are eating, enjoying your food. And when you are enjoying your food, there's one mental factor called pleasant feeling. This pleasant feeling enjoys or experiences the desirable aspect of the food. And the second feeling is called unpleasant feeling. Dukkha Vedana. He enjoys or experiences the undesirable aspect of the object. Number three is called neutral feeling. Upekha Vedana. In some objects in which the tastes are neutral or not evidently good or bad, the feeling that enjoys or experiences that taste is called neutral feeling. Among the 52 mental factors, only feeling or Vedana fully enjoy or fully experience the taste of object. Just like a cook, for example, in palace, there are many cooks cooking for the king. So when the cooks finish cooking, then they serve the king. Who enjoy the food? Is it the cook or the king? King. The cook maybe also can enjoy after king finish, then he may enjoy the food. So similarly, among 52 mental factors, this feeling just like a king, fully enjoy the taste of the food. The rest 51 mental factors only enjoy partially, not fully. Okay. For another example, when you're practicing Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, when your mind is well concentrated on the breath or the nimitta, you feel pleasurable feeling. So then you will say, I feel good when my mind is concentrated on the breath. So at that moment, it's not you feel good. It's not you feel the pleasurable feeling. It's the mental factor of feeling which experience that pleasurable. And that mental feeling is not I, it's not you, and it's not a person. Okay? Is it clear? Okay. So, accept among all the 52 mental factors, apart from the mental factors of feeling, which experience the desirable or undesirable of objects. There's no I, no he, no she, and no one who enjoys the taste of the objects. So if you study Abhidhamma, it becomes very clear to you, there's no I. The non-self nature will become very clear to you. The next one, perception. Sanya. The characteristic of perception is perceiving the qualities of the object. For example, when you see the birds, you see a bird flying in the sky. So then the perception will perceive the quality of the bird. What is the quality of the bird? Wings and flying. So the perception make a mark. The perception make a mark. That wing, that bird has wing, then flying in the sky. So when you make a mark, then it become a condition for next time to perceive it again. Oh, this is a bird. So the function of the perception is to make a sign or mark as a condition to perceive again that it is the same. Without perception, you cannot recognize things. Without mental factors of perception, you cannot recognize me, I cannot recognize you. Okay. And the manifestation of perception is interpreting of the object by way of the pictures that have been apprehended, like blind man recognizes an elephant. How a blind man recognizes an elephant? By elephant's tusk, and his four feet, trunk, body, and so on. So perception is very important. Without perception, we cannot recognize anything. But perception also, perception sometimes can be wrong. Buddha say all phenomena are impermanent, dukkha and non-self. But what we have perceived so far are all happiness, are all permanent, and there's a self. We always identify our perception as self, feeling as self, contact as self. So this is called wrong perception. We perceive wrongly. And once you perceive wrongly, it imprints very deeply in your mental stream. One time you perceive wrongly, it imprints very strongly in your mental stream, and it becomes very difficult to change. Just like a scarecrow in a paddy field. A deer has seen a man before. So when a deer sees a man, the perception perceives the quality of the man. What's the quality of the man? One head, two hands, and two feet. So the deer already perceives the quality of the man and make a sign. Oh, man has one head, two hands, and two feet. So next, and the farmer, in order to frighten the deer, because the deer comes to eat the paddy. So the farmer, in order to frighten him, put a scarecrow in the paddy field. So when the deer comes again, when he sees this scarecrow, because previously he already perceived it wrongly, he already make a sign that man has such features. So now he sees again that perception, then he perceives it wrongly. He thinks that this scarecrow is real person. Then he was frightened and he ran away. That's why perception can be wrong. And most of the time we perceive wrongly. What we perceive is not the true nature of things. In America, when I taught them the 32 parts of the body, the repulsiveness of the 32 parts of the body, then they told me, no, we cannot do this meditation subject. Because since young, we are taught this body is full of beauty. Now you want me to reflect the repulsiveness of the body. You say they cannot do. This is called wrong perception. Wrong perception, because they have been taught the body is beauty. So they perceive it as a beauty. Once you perceive wrongly, it imprints very deeply in your mind. Then it becomes very difficult to change. Now, you have been told many times, because all of you are Buddhists, you have been told many times all phenomena are impermanent, suffering, non-self. But I don't think you really perceive it as such. Because previously, in the round of rebirth, we have been perceived it, all phenomena are permanent, happiness, and self. That become imprinted very deeply in your mind. Become very difficult to change. Unless you practice concentration and wisdom and see things and penetrate into things as they really are, then you will remove what you have wrongly perceived previously.
Okay.
That's why perception become one of the factors extend the round of rebirth. Okay, the next one, volition, chetana. The characteristic of volition is it wills. The function is accumulates karma. The manifestation, coordination, organizes or urges its associated mental factors in acting upon the object. Sometimes we say, I do something bad. I have accumulated bad karma. Actually, good or bad action is not karma. Precise saying, the volition accompanied with good and bad action is called karma. Karma. Greed is not karma, but volition accompanied with greed, that volition is called karma. More precisely, Abhidhamma is very precise. So volition, the function of volition, it accumulates karma. And also it urges the manifestation, it urges its associated mental factors in acting upon the object. Only by giving example you will understand. Just now we have studied contact, pasa. The function of contact is it impingement. And we also have studied feeling. The function of feeling is to experience or enjoy the taste of object. And we have also studied perception. The function of perception is to make a mark or sign so that you can recognize it again. So now the volition. Volition urges the contact. Okay, now you do your work. Please impinge the object and the sense sensitivity and consciousness. Volition urges this contact to do his work. And the volition urges the feeling to experience the taste of the object. And the volition urges the perception to perceive the quality of the object. So volition has a double task. It accomplishes its own function of accumulating karma, but only when it associates with wholesome and unwholesome consciousness. If it is volition is associated with resultant consciousness, it cannot perform the function of accumulating karma. Okay. So one task, it accumulates karma. And second task, it urges associated mental factor to do their work. Urges contact to do their work, urges feeling and perception to do their work. Just as a senior pupil in the class, who not only recite his own lessons himself, but urges others to recite theirs as well. And the Buddha says, bhikkhus, it is volition that I call karma. For having willed, one performs an action through body, speech or mind. Okay, now I can start telling story. Samawati, the queen of Samawati. She was foremost in radiating loving kindness to all beings. Among all the lay devotees, lay woman devotees of the Lord Buddha, she is the foremost in radiating loving kindness. But one day, she was burned, her palace with all her 500 followers, ladies who served her. All of them are burned because another queen, Magandhiya, who bear a grudge towards the Lord Buddha, and she did not like Samawati being a pious Buddhist. So she burned Magandhiya, another queen, Magandhiya, burned the whole palace. So Samawati and her 500 ladies are burned and died. Why? Everything occurs because of causes. So what's the reason that she was burned to death? Huh? During one of her past life, she was also queen of Menaras. One day, she went out with all 500 ladies for a bath. So after that, she feel very cold. She wants to get some warm. Then she ordered her ladies to collect to burn a bush to get some heat. It's too late to spot that there was a Pacheka Buddha sitting in the bush. So when she saw the fire already start burning, then she realized there's Pacheka Buddha sitting in the bush. So she was very afraid. She did not want to be blamed by the king setting the fire without caution. Then she asked her to obliterate her mystic. She asked her 500 ladies to collect more grass and put more dry leaf branches into that fire and pour oil to the Pacheka Buddha's body and burn it again. The first time when she burned the bushes, she did not know there was a Pacheka Buddha inside the bushes. So she did it with volition or without volition? Without volition. So if at that time she did it and stopped, then she has not accumulated the bad karma. Because karma means volition. Volition means karma. But second time, she already knew that was Pacheka inside. And she, in order to obliterate her mystic, she asked her lady to pour water on the Pacheka Buddha. This time, she did it with volition. Thus, karma was performed. Because of this bad karma, that even though she became Sotapanna during Buddha's time, she was burned to death together with the same 500 ladies. Thus, we say volition means karma. Okay. So, in the any connective process, either five soul or my dog, at the jhana stage, we say wholesome and unwholesome karma are performed at the jhana stage. At this stage, that volition is always associated either with wholesome karma or unwholesome karma. At this stage, that volition is called karma. Okay? The next one, one-pointedness, ekagata. The characteristic of one-pointedness is unification of mind. Fixes the mind on its object and is a state of collecting the mind. Whatever consciousness arises must accompanied by this one-pointedness. Without this one-pointedness, you cannot concentrate on one object. So it fixes the mind on its object. Even though it may be very weak, only when you develop it into a certain degree, it becomes concentration. Ekagata, one-pointedness, become concentration. But sometimes it can be very weak. For example, the mind goes one here, there, also need one-pointedness to stay at that object first, then go to another. So without one-pointedness, mind cannot stay at one object at all. Okay, the function of one-pointedness is unite the associated mental state. And the manifestation is peace. When come to meditation practice, why your mind can focus on your breath? Why the mind can focus on the breath? Because of one-pointedness. Because of mental factors of one-pointedness. So in the beginning, it may be very weak. It can concentrate only maybe 10 seconds, then maybe 20 seconds. But when you develop it further, you can concentrate. The one pointedness can fix longer time, and at that time, this one pointedness become concentration. Then you can concentrate for about 20 minutes, 1 hour, and so on. The last one, the number six, is called life faculty, jivitindriya. The characteristic of life faculty is sustain the vitality of the consciousness and mental factors, so that they will remain alive and endure for their full life. Otherwise, they will perish before the task of getting or knowing that object is complete. All mental factors, they arise together. They arise together, contact, feeling, perception, volition, one pointedness, they arise together. And this life faculty gives them life, gives them life force, so that they can perform their task. Without this life force, they cannot be sustained. So the function of life faculty is to make them occur, make all the mental factors occur and consciousness occur. Manifestation is the establishing of their presence. Just as lotus flowers are sustained by water, the consciousness and the associated mental factors are sustained by the mental life faculty. So all consciousness and mental factors can function actively because of the life force of it. So the next one, attention, manasikara. The characteristic of attention is conducting the associated mental state towards the object. Directing or direct the mental factors towards the object. The function is to yoke associated mental states to the object. And the manifestation, face to face with the object. And is regarded as the charioteer or rudder of the ship. Because of power of attention, that one or another object is constantly present in the mind. No attention. Suppose there's a big elephant pass in front of you, but because you do not pay attention to the elephant, so you will not see. So attention is very important here. Direct the mind towards the object. And because of power of attention, that one or another object constantly appear in your mind. Okay, so now we have finished all the seven universes. Let's repeat one more time. Contact, feeling, perception, volition, one-pointedness, life, faculty, attention. And these seven are called universes because they must arise with all types of consciousness. We have studied 89 types of consciousness. All consciousness must accompany it by these seven universes. This is called seven universes. And these seven universes perform the most basic and essential cognitive function, without which consciousness of an object would be utterly impossible. How? Let me give you an example. In the process of eating, when you eat, enjoying your food, how contact perform its function, how feeling perform its function. In the process of eating, the contact perform its function, causing the object and the consciousness, for some tongue consciousness, to impinge. That's all. The mental factor of feeling perform the function of experiencing the desirable aspect of the object. That's all. The mental factor of perception, when you are eating something sweet, the mental factor of perception perceives the quality of that food, for example, sweet. So it perceives the sweet quality of that food. The mental the mental factor of volition, it accumulates karma. So if you are enjoying your food, the karma is rooted in greed. So it accumulates the karma rooted in greed. Not only that, volition has two tasks. It also urges contact to do his work, urges feeling to do his work, urges perception to do his work. And the next one pointedness fix all the mental state towards that food. And the life faculty gives life to the contact, to feeling, perception, volition, and one pointedness. Give them life so that they can do their work. And attention direct all the mental associated mental state towards that taste. So this is how the seven universes perform their basic and essential cognitive functions to help consciousness in the act of eating. Which one is I? Which one is I? No I. So there's no I. Okay, we stop for a while.